Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be talking with the executive director of the Historic Park City Alliance, Allison Kula. We'll be talking about the results of the survey about possibly closing Main Street one day a week to vehicles. General Manager of the Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District, Mike Lures, has details on how the district continued to operate when it discovered that two staff members had tested positive for COVID-19. Rob Harder is the Executive Director of the Christian Center of Park City. He talks about the continuing needs in our community and the services his organization is offering during the COVID-19 crisis. And finally, Snyderville Basin Recreation Director Brian Hatton with an update on the reopening. Well, Park City's historic Main Street is a tourist attraction, and with uncertain of COVID-19 impacts on travel, survival of Main Street businesses is uncertain. KPCW's Carolyn Murray has more on that.
Last month, city leaders allowed code lenience for sidewalk dining. They're allowing businesses to use outside sidewalk space with fewer restrictions. Now, the Historic Main Street Alliance wants input from businesses and property owners on potentially closing Main Street to cars. Park City Council member Max Doyle-Nee says 80% of the revenues for Main Street businesses come from visitors.
The idea that Park City is going to go up and support Main Street at the level it needs to be supported, it would require all of us going up there and spending our entire bankroll almost every weekend. It's incredibly unlikely that we're going to be able to do that. I want to make it as attractive for us as possible, but the numbers that are coming out of Main Street in terms of how to survive, they're really, really startling.
Closing Main Street to vehicles has been a decades-long discussion, and it's mired in complexities. The HPCA sent a survey asking Main Street businesses to give input on the issue.
I have seen the plans. Logistically, it's really hard to do a no-cars Main Street all the time. The HPCA did put out a survey. They have a little video that they put out that explains some of the difficulties. I think we really need to lean on those businesses.
Doyle-Nee says City Council doesn't want to force the Main Street proprietors to do something they think would hurt the already struggling business environment.
Council's not taking a position on that yet. We are leaning on our business leaders to give us direction. I think it's really important that the people who are on Main Street, they know their businesses. They know exactly what's going on up there. And for us to force something on them without their input in a heavy, heavy way, I think would be pretty misguided.
Based upon Nan Worrell's request, the city is looking at using blue lights to light up the McPolin barn during this time of COVID-19 response. It would be an act of solidarity with many communities celebrating the heroic work of the people working on the front lines during the coronavirus epidemic. I'm Carolyn Murray, KPCW News.
Well, as we reported, the Historic Park City Alliance is asking members to give input on whether to allow a vehicle-free day on Main Street. On the phone with details, I have the executive director of the HPCA, Allison Kula. Good morning, Day.
Absolutely. We had a work group come together for two meetings. They represented kind of each industry sector that's located on Main Street. And what we tried to do is find out what idea could we get consensus out of the group to float to the merchants. And really, the one day a week is where we landed. Why one day a week? Well, Main Street wasn't broken before, you know, the virus or the pandemic hit. Main Street was generating over $300 million in sales just in last year's summer season. And so for us, we want to look at it as an enhancement, not as a fix, because we don't understand necessarily anything we want to fix. So what we're trying to do is just try it, and let's try it for one day. And if we close Main Street to cars, does it encourage and entice customers to come up because there's additional room to be able to wander the streets and to be able to go and look at what the businesses have to offer?
Yeah, and I guess it's just, I mean, these aren't normal times, so do we need to really look at doing something different then? I mean, again, you're saying one day and only from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. So why just 6 hours? Why not just give it a 24-hour or, you know, 18-hour opportunity?
Absolutely. So for two reasons. One, deliveries occur on Main Street until 11 a.m. And the west side, so the side where Wasso, eating establishment, No Name, those businesses on the west side do not have an alleyway. They don't have the ability to have additional products come in through the back door. Even their garbage goes through the front door. So we need to be able to make sure that they're still up and ready to be able to receive the deliveries they need. And then at 5 o'clock, we are suggesting for it to reopen, because what we're seeing and hearing from the restaurants is their most viable business option is curbside. And so, again, those west side businesses don't have the ability to be able to provide curbside at their back door. And we want to make curbside as easy as possible so that people are able to use it and the restaurants can see revenue off of that.
So I guess some would say that you're kind of setting this idea up for failure, even if you went along with it, because people, I think what they want to experience is a summer evening on a carless Main Street. And, you know, all you're really offering them is kind of a summer lunchtime.
Right. And the thing is I'm not hearing that that's what people want. What I think is hard for people to understand is my role is to represent the businesses. And so my role solely is to find out what the businesses are willing to try. And that's where we've landed.
All right. So let's talk about, has the deadline passed? And because I think you're meeting on this tomorrow to talk more about
it. We are. The deadline ends for the survey at 10 a.m. this morning.
All right. So what have you seen so far?
To tell you the truth, I haven't looked since Thursday.
Okay.
And the reason why is it's that whole, you know, a watched pot doesn't boil, because typically with surveys, you see them swing one way and then the other. And for my mental well-being, it's just easier to see what the final results are when they're final.
Okay. Well, I saw the final results as of this morning, where 73% of those surveyed and only 63 responses. How many businesses was this sent out to?
So we have just under 250 business licenses. This was not a vote. It was a straw poll, and it was sent to the businesses on Main Street. And we have, again, lots of times, multiple addresses for businesses. So it was sent to a distribution list of about 400.
Oh, wow. Okay. So we only have 63 of 400 then. And so far, 73% saying that they do support a car-free Main Street one day a week from 11 to 5 for the summer 2020. And then you asked, I mean, if yes, I mean, what day should that be? And it looks like the overwhelming majority of those saying 65% saying a Sunday. So 11 to 5 mm-hmm. on a Sunday. So things could change, certainly. Again, they have another hour and 40 minutes to respond to that. Once you do have the results, then what happens on Tuesday?
So once the results are finalized at 10, I need to go through and scrub the list. So we need to make sure that it was just businesses that are within the business improvement district that responded. So that's the first thing I need to do is double check the list. And then from that point, provide the entire membership by noon today, the results of the survey. Tomorrow is a discussion at our board meeting. And truly, it's to understand, you know, and have a discussion, not just among the board members, but among those that attend. We'll be holding the meeting via Zoom, but we'll be speaking with the business owners about, you know, are you comfortable with this? If so, yes, let's move forward with a request to the city. And as we move forward with a request to the city, I do see some of those challenges that we outlined in the video we'll be seeking assistance with from the city. You know, previously when the sidewalk is used or was used for dining in the past or was used for sidewalk sales, you have to have 48 inches of clear space. But if we're allowed to use the whole sidewalk, do we then have to have ramps up and down each curb between each business, or can that be done differently? Or can the city help us with the DABC looking at liquor law extensions into the street? So what you're seeing right now is just kind of that base formula. What are we comfortable with closing? And then two, our next step is to start addressing challenges that could further enhance what we're offering on the one day a week we're closed.
All right. So what do you think the soonest this could happen would be?
Well, I think for me, definitely by June 15th. I'm not one to rush. I'd rather try to iron out all the problems as much as possible. It could be as soon as the first weekend in June, but I want to put a realistic date out there, because while it seems easy to throw a couple barricades across, you know, the street, there's quite a lot of detail that needs to go into everything. And especially one thing that we want to make sure is that we're not driving traffic into the residential neighborhoods. Because essentially, once you drive up Sweet Alley, and if Main Street was closed, your two options to be able to get out of Old Town is using Hillside Avenue or Park Avenue. And that's one thing we want to stop. So we're proposing a turnaround in the Brewpub lot. So what does that look like? Where do we need to put barricades? Is there a section of Upper Main Street where there's residential that's really just those homes and their traffic? So I don't want to just run out, you know, next week and try to make this happen. We want to make sure it's successful starting day one.
Okay. And actually, that Sunday is the 14th. So would that be the target date as opposed to the 15th?
Yes, okay. Sunday is the day of preference. Then yes, I believe it would be the 14th. Is that Father's Day?
Yes.
Oh, no. Okay.
Yes.
So yes, at this point, if everyone still stays in the boat and the city council supportive of this one day a week trial, then that we would look to be operational by that time.
All right. Let's talk a little bit more about the alcohol service. I mean, the challenge is there. I mean, with dining decks, alcohol can be carried over the sidewalk. Is that how it works now?
It is, and it's a small exception in the DABC code.
So what would need to change?
Not for dining decks, but for if a business wanted, well, so a little bit of history. Dining decks are expensive to build because there's two different slopes on the street. There's the downhill uphill slope, and then you've got the crown of the road. And so the decks are tens of thousands of dollars to build. We're by asking a restaurant to do that just so they can have alcohol service is a huge ask, especially when we don't want businesses to spend extra money. So is there a way that the DABC would allow alcohol on the street if, let's say, a business wanted to go out and just put tables out on that one day, kind of in the parallel parking spaces, would they be allowed, if they have the proper fencing and whatnot, to be able to have alcohol? So that's one option. That would be a cost savings for those merchants that would want to try that.
Okay. And that would be, would we have to close Main Street, to check for IDs, or that would be up to the individual restaurants or bars' responsibility to...
Yeah, it's not going to be wandering around. You'd need to see a fenced area for that specific restaurant with an entrance and exit, just like you do with the decks. So it would be like a deck, but just on the asphalt.
Okay. Somebody just corrected me that Father's Day is actually June 21st.
There we go.
Yeah, okay. So you've got time, folks. Let's see. Talk a little bit about the dining pickup. How is that working for Main Street restaurants?
You know, right now I believe we have 6 restaurants that are doing that, and they are saying that, you know, this is their most sustainable model because of the reduced capacity that they're seeing because of the regulations. And so they are saying that it's going well for them. For many people, it is their most stable revenue source and probably will be for the, you know, near future. So we continue to encourage people to be able to put that as an option for their businesses. Okay. And we do have curbside pickup for some retail establishments, too.
Okay. Let's see. In terms of reopening, what kind of reopening should we expect to see in the next couple of weeks, just given the restrictions lifted a bit?
For sure. So I'm hearing that most restaurants want to try to open by June 1st with the limited kind of seating capacity. And again, that seating capacity and the limitations are the same whether you're indoor or outdoor, just to make sure that everyone knows that. So really, June 1st is a date that we're hearing a lot of businesses aim for to be able to reopen.
Okay. All right. Let's see. And I guess final question was the fact that if you do this, you're going to just do it for 1 week, 1 day a week. I mean, you wouldn't come back. Given just say that it was wildly successful. I mean, it would be too difficult to come back and ask for more days.
No, it wouldn't be difficult.
No.
I think what you would see us do is again, poll the businesses, make sure we have a majority of support for it, and then we go back for an additional request to City Council.
Okay, but so council and DABC, I guess that's the challenging one, huh?
Well, I think when you go to DABC, you ask for 7 days. Like, you don't go in asking for your little, you know, as little, ask for as much. So that way, if we do see that this is successful, then it's not another hurdle. That would be my, you know, my strategy going in.
All right. Hey, anything else, Allison, you think we should know about this? Oh, the trolley. No, would that continue to run?
Yes, we have outlined within our proposal that the trolley could continue to run, but it would be running using the trolley turnaround on 9th Street down where, like, the food vendors are typically for Silly Market. And then it would go 9th Street to Park Ave, so go up in front of Devanza's and High West, hang a left in, at, like, Free People, go all the way to Swede, and then Swede to the Brew Pub. It would have the turnaround at the Brew Pub, which would get people right to the top of the street.
Okay. Allison, I appreciate your time this morning.
No problem. Thanks, Leslie.
It's Allison Kuhlow, Executive Director of the Historic Park City Alliance. You're listening to the Local News Hour. When the rest of Utah eases into a yellow or low risk or have level for COVID-19, Summit and Wasatch counties remain at orange, a moderate risk level. Health officials say that's because of the high rate of the disease per capita in these counties. But Summit County did make some changes. Last week, the council passed a new health order, which clarified what that orange level means. It went into effect on Saturday, and it will last through the week. Deputy Health Director Phil Bondurant said that the 16-page order removes the specific operating protocols for the majority of businesses. Those protocols were put into place May 1st when all businesses were allowed to reopen. However, under the new order passed Thursday, restrictions still remain for restaurant and food services, lodging, indoor recreation, arts and entertainment venues, as well as special events. Bondurant said that there was a lot of give and take with local business owners who had filed appeals with the county.
Most of the appellants were in support of what we have done and the conclusions that have come from this new order that's being proposed. And I suspect that over the course of the next week, we'll be able to take the data that's made available and determine a week from today what the next step is for the county as we start this slow, methodical entry to make sure that we're not getting ahead of ourselves and that we are doing what we can to make sure that this dial, when we turn it one direction, it continues to move in a positive direction and there's not a back and forth between different phases, which would be very difficult for businesses.
For restaurants, no more than 6 people can be at a table unless they are members of the same family, and tables must be spaced 6 feet apart. For indoor gyms, there can be no more than 1 person per 100 square feet and no more than 20 people on each floor, and that includes staff. For all businesses, employees who interact with the public must wear a mask, and the mask must cover the nose and mouth. Council addressed concerns from one public comment about employees at a local home improvement store who were not wearing masks. Bondurant said that managers at all businesses should be training their staff appropriately, and they need the public's help to hold them accountable.
We can't get to every retail establishment on a daily basis. We can follow up on complaints and as they come in and work to educate, but there's also a responsibility of the community to help with that as well. So if you see it, there's always a polite and courteous way to have that conversation with an individual. And sometimes it's just a simple reminder to help them understand what it is that the mask is used for and how it's to be worn if you're comfortable having that.
Public and private gatherings in Summit County are still limited to 20 people or less, while in the rest of the state, those gatherings can be up to 50 people. County Council was asked by a member of the public about the ski resorts, who noted that Sundance Resort just announced they were reopening in limited capacity. Council Chair Doug Clyde said that Summit County resorts weren't there yet.
I can say simply at this point that while we have had some discussions with them, none of them have been, let's say, actionable or have resulted in some specific plan that either of those resorts have. We are scheduled to have conversations with them in the near future to understand what it is they would like to do and how we can make that fit within our orders. As of right now, we do not have, to my understanding, any requests from DV or PC, meaning Deer Valley or Park City Resort, to open their summer operations at this point.
Bondurant said one specific concern for the county is that as businesses is in an odd position because of our tourist economy.
We've not been able to gauge what that combination of those kinds of businesses combined with potentially higher rates of infected people coming here into those businesses and contributing to spread. We don't have enough data points to judge whether our risk is going to grow. That's something we're going to have to measure over the next few weeks as we proceed through Orange. And my guess is the governor is probably not going to give us an indefinite ability to remain in Orange. We're going to be pushed into yellow sooner rather than later.
The new order is in effect through Friday, at which point the council will look at the number of data points, including the infection rate of COVID-19, as well as the number of people in the hospital because of the disease, and probably revise the order. KPCW has all 16 pages of the new order on our website, kpcw.org. Well, at tonight's meeting, the general manager of the Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District, Mike Lures, will update the Board of Trustees about two recovered cases of staff members with COVID-19. In a pre-recorded interview, Lures began by explaining how they learned that the two employees, both asymptomatic, tested positive for the virus.
Early on in the pandemic, we had one employee that came down with COVID-19, and he was totally asymptomatic, and he got it from his girlfriend, who was asymptomatic. Unfortunately, he came to work, and then he spent a lot of time with the supervisor because he was a new employee, and then a supervisor became down with COVID-19. However, he was also asymptomatic. As a result of that, we placed a number of employees in quarantine at home for 14 days, and thank goodness we haven't had any additional cases here at the district. As you well know, Leslie, we do provide an essential service. So we've taken extensive actions to protect our skilled staff and the public, in particular our advanced water reclamation facilities are staffed with licensed operators, and we can't afford to have them come down with COVID-19. So we have our folks operating in isolation, and we continue to do that. And so far, good news from the employee standpoint of view.
Yeah, so both of the staff members are okay and then back to work now?
Yes.
All right. So how did you learn, though? I mean, if they were asymptomatic, how did you learn that somebody was actually sick with the virus?
Yeah, this was a rather unusual set of events. Our employee's girlfriend traveled to Australia early on in the pandemic to help her parents move. When she arrived, they said, hey, you've been traveling. Do you want to be tested? She said, yeah, sure. Well, they tested her, and she was positive but totally asymptomatic. So obviously she contacted her boyfriend, our employee, and said, hey, you're not going to believe this, but I'm positive. So he went to the testing center, and fortunately they tested him. He was found to be positive. And because he spent so much time with his supervisor, the testing center agreed to test him, and he was also asymptomatic. So had his girlfriend not traveled to Australia, none of these folks probably would have been tested. So it was just a fortunate sequence of events that we were able to determine that we had asymptomatic employees on site. And then the people that they had been associated with, and from a very close contact standpoint of view, I think we sent four employees home for 14 days, and we were able to stop the spread of COVID-19 within our group.
Okay, so it was just four of the staff that you had to send home. It wasn't like everybody had to go into quarantine then, huh?
That's correct. The two employees that were positive were sent home, and then we sent four additional employees home because we knew they had spent quite a bit of time with these two individuals.
So that didn't impact then the work that you guys need to do?
No, fortunately, it did not, and we've taken dramatic steps to keep our folks isolated, and because we cannot afford to obviously not operate the water treatment plants or the what we call the water reclamation facilities.
Sure. So what are some of those things that steps that you've taken then? I mean, doing things differently than you had to before.
Well, number one, we used to rotate our shifts between the two plants. We don't do that anymore, and we require each person to work in isolation at the treatment plant. Now, some of our work requires removing heavy motors and equipment, and you can't do it as an individual. it takes two people. So we've paired work crews up where necessary into two-person crews, and they are, so to speak, married to each other for the duration of the pandemic. They don't have contact with the other employees, and when something big needs to be done, we send a two-man crew into to do the heavy work, but they don't have contact with other crews, and they don't work with other individuals. So that's why we've set it up.
So are they all wearing personal protective equipment, or do they need to? They're separated far enough away from each other, or
they wear masks. Now, something that that's kind of obvious, but you know, wastewater contains COVID-19 virus, along with, you know, many other disease-causing bacteria and viruses. So we wear N95 masks, face shields, gloves, tieback suits for most of the work that we do. And that's just a continuation of what we've always done. We have ramped it up a little bit for the guys that are working in the field on cleaning the sewer lines. So, yes, they do wear the PPEs, and we've increased the usage of PPEs for the guys that maintain our sewer system.
Wow. Okay. So that's interesting that the virus already existed in the wastewater before this pandemic even happened.
Well, not COVID-19, or not the SARS-2 virus, but other viruses. You know, wastewater contains everything from, you know, it can contain HIV, you know, hepatitis, cholera, all of those type of things. So it's just protective measures that we have previously had in place to protect our employees that also protect employees for the SARS virus. So, no, the SARS didn't exist there, but it certainly exists there now.
This is a dangerous job.
It really is. And, I mean, our guys get suited up when they hit the two operations that they're exposed for all sewage, so they have to really be careful. You know, along those same lines, because of the high per capita infection rate we have here in the Park City area, University of Utah, BYU, and Baylor University out of Texas have asked us to participate in a number of COVID studies, and this is where they take samples of wastewater from the treatment plants and look for the genetic material associated with a SARS-CoV-2 virus. And that's ongoing. We take samples every week. And the idea there is, can they determine how many people are infected with the SARS virus based on the samples that they collect from wastewater? And those studies are ongoing, and we don't have any real set of conclusions yet from those studies.
Any other issues as a result of the pandemic here?
Well, two things. One, I just want to reassure the public that, yes, we do have the SARS virus in our wastewater, but our advanced reclamation facilities use ultraviolet light or UV light, and it kills the SARS virus along with all the other viruses before we discharge that water into our local streams. I've had a couple calls about that, concerned about that. So the good news is we completely knock out those viruses before that treated wastewater is put back into streams. Just kind of a side note, one of the problems that we've been faced with during this pandemic is something that we didn't really anticipate, and that is with the reduction of wastewater being generated from restaurants and lodging establishments, that we don't have enough wastewater to keep our microbiotic, the bugs that treat the wastewater, the microscopic bugs, alive. So we've had to take dramatic steps in dealing with that situation. As an example, our new treatment plant over here behind Home Depot, we've shut half of it down because we don't have enough wastewater or enough poop to keep the bugs alive. So we've concentrated the bugs down into a smaller part portion of the treatment facility to keep them alive, and they are doing great now, but to have to shut down a half of a treatment plant to keep your bugs alive is something we've never had to do before, and we've never been faced with this situation, and it's it's new territory for us.
Is that a result of just fewer people in town?
It's fewer people in town, but restaurants and some of the lodging establishments where food is prepared and all, the wastewater is stronger, meaning it has more particles in there of food and whatnot. And our treatment plants have been designed to receive that type of wastewater. And now that the characteristics of the wastewater is much different, meaning it's, I hate to use the word strength, but it has less stuff in it. We have to reduce the size or the portion of the treatment plant that we're using to treat the wastewater. And hopefully as restaurants and all start opening up here, it will revert back to kind of normal conditions. But yeah, that's been a big deal for us. And we've had to really do some things that we would have never dreamed we would have to do.
Additional expense or just trying to figure it out?
It's not additional expense. It's just doing the microbiology and the chemistry of treating the wastewater based on wastewater that's unusual. And so there's not any additional expense. I mean, certainly we've had personnel time, but operating expense has actually gone down because we're operating a smaller portion of the treatment plant.
Okay. Gosh, anything else you wanted to add?
That's it, Leslie.
Okay. Hey, thanks so much for your time, Mike.
Well, the roundabout project at the Jeremy and Pine Brook exits off of Interstate 80 will be finished before this first day of summer. In the meantime, some of the traffic patterns will be changing again as the contractor putting the final finishes on the project. The contractor estimates that his crew will be out of there by June 18th. Still, Summit County Public Works Director Derek Radke says that there will still be a few things to clean up after that. In the meantime, the good news is that they are still within the budget, even though the project was delayed due to a number of setbacks.
There were a lot of things that came up on the project as far as groundwater issues that delayed construction. There were a lot of utilities that either weren't known about or were not in the right place that caused some delays. We're still negotiating with the contractor on time. We don't know yet whether there'll be liquidated damages or the time will turn out in their favor. We're still doing that negotiation process. But money-wise, we're still on target.
With cold weather expected later this week, crews will be performing the final paving and permanent striping of the entire project area. That will require a one-day closure at each of the roundabouts. Today, the Pine Brook roundabout is closed, and that will require that traffic be diverted. Everyone going in and out of Pine Brook will need to use the Kilby Road to Kimball Junction to get where they need to go. Then tomorrow, the Jeremy roundabout will close, and everyone on the north side of I-80 will need to use Rasmussen Road. After that, the road closures will be done. Radke says that there will still be concrete medians and sidewalks to install. The park and ride is still being rebuilt in the same location as it was. It'll be rough graded and then paved the week after Memorial Day. Radke says it should be in usable condition by mid-June. Joining me now for an update from the Christian Center of Park City, I have the Executive Director, Rob Harder. Good morning, Rob.
Hey, good morning, Leslie.
Let's see, food pantry. Gosh, over the last couple of months, you have helped more than 800 families since mid-March, 300 of them for the first time. Is that starting to slow at all as we start to see some of the reopening of the economy?
It's so interesting. Yes, we did. This last week, we saw slowing down. Our numbers were a little bit lower than they've been. I think I've mentioned many times on the show, about 1,000 each week, but it was just around 800 this last week. And so I think it's a combination of possibly the economy's opening back up. I know we've lost a lot of international students. They were finally able to return to their home countries. So I think those are the two probably main reasons why we've seen a bit of a drop.
Okay, but you're still available for anybody who might need food, right?
Exactly. Like we said before, we've had about a 40%, of the people that have signed up are brand new. They've never come to the food pantry before, so I know it's still a need for a lot of people. So, yeah, we just encourage you. Our hours are still the same, 11 to 4. We do ask you to sign up ahead of time before you show up, just so we are allowing people to come into the food pantry, but, trying to honor the social distancing still as much as possible. We're still under the orange, organizational, whatever that's called again, the orange setup. So we are trying to honor that. But yes, it's still available. We encourage you to come. You can come twice a month. We'll get you enough food for 2 weeks.
All right. You sign up online or do you need to make a phone call or how does that work?
Yeah, just come online. That's the easiest, is go to our CCFPC, or the Christian Center of Park City. You can Google that. Go to our food pantry page, and you can sign up right there. If you do have problems with that, you can certainly call, and we can get you set up for that as well.
Last Friday was the date that the eviction moratorium that the governor had put into effect lifted. What are you expecting from here on out?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, you know, it looks like, you know, as Trevor, you know, a lot of the state has gone to the yellow, and we're still in orange here in Summit County. And in terms of the, you know, whatever for the rent, I think here's the challenge, is that people are not going to be able to get the same hours right away. Some people are not being hired right away. They still don't have a job, and many of them have not received unemployment at all. So I don't think the rental issue and that's going to just turn around on a dime. The good news is, and I do want to spread this to those who are listening, if you are in a government-subsidized apartment, we have double-checked this multiple times, technically because of the CARES Act, the federal standard, because, again, for any apartment complex here in Park City, or Summit County that is government subsidized, no one could be evicted through the end of July, essentially. So they've got through July, really, to be able to pay the rent. That is part of the CARES Act. So it's a little different than the governor. I know there's a little bit of distinction, and the governor's more for any, you know, person who's renting, but the CARES Act is specific for federal government subsidized housing, which is a large portion of the people that have applied for our basic needs assistance. So we do want to let people know, and to kind of reduce some of those fears that you can't be evicted if you're in one of those. Now, if you're struggling and you're worried that you're going to be evicted in a non-subsidized apartment complex, we do ask you to contact us. We still have that available. You know, we've helped hundreds of families now, and as I gave an update on last week, you know, we're close to now, we've paid almost 900 bills because, you know, some people ask in addition to the rent bill, power bill, utility bill. So we've been able to help a lot, which has been wonderful. And we were able to do a second round, and there's a chance we may be able to do a portion of a third round of help. So again, if you're listening and you need help with your rent, utility bills, et cetera, please contact us. We'd like to help as much as we can.
Okay. How much have you distributed in terms of cash?
Yes, so we are getting close to, cash-wise, we're getting close to $400,000.
Wow.
In terms of what's come out of our assistance fund, the basic needs assistance fund. So, yeah, we have raised over $600,000. So my guess is we'll clearly pass $400,000 this week and maybe in approach $450,000. So we've got some room to go, which is good. So we want to make sure, again, this is money that's just to pass through the Christian Center. And so we've got more people we can help.
All right. You have also opened the thrift stores. What kind of business are you seeing there?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. So recreational equipment, you know, our bikes, our golf equipment, a lot of people are excited to get out and get some, you know, equipment so they can get out there and enjoy the weather now. So that's been good. And Heber is a little lower than normal, but not drastically. So the stores are, I definitely saw an uptick the end of last week. So we kind of anticipate that's just going to get busier the next few days, next couple of weeks, as things open up a little bit more. And then on the flip side, the receiving, which we've talked about, it's been just crazy. I mean, it's been as busy as it's ever been, but our team was prepared. So we're really glad that we were ready for that. But again, it's been wonderful. I mean, people have definitely been storing up a lot of things to donate over the last 2 months. And so we've definitely seen a higher volume than we've ever had, actually, with receiving. So, but again, we're able to handle it right now. And pickups will resume this week. If you need a pickup, you can contact the Christian Center. You can also go online, and there's a nice online sign-up form. You can just do that. It's a little easier, but either way, let us know if you need a pickup, and we can resume those this week.
Okay. And is that for larger items or...
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. Typically, those who just can't fit it in their truck or can't get it over the Christian Center, and it's a large drop off, we're happy to do pickups.
Okay. So you have been able then to manage all of the things you've received so far, huh? And just kind of putting them away and getting to them when you can.
That's exactly right. Yeah, it's been challenging on the stream because just the per car, we have had the volume of, we've had about the same amount of cars like in a busy season of last year and summer, but each individual has way more donations per person than we've had ever. And remember, even last summer, we had a 5-bag limit simply because we were just inundated with so many donations. We did not put any kind of limit on what you can donate, partly because we just knew people had stuff they wanted to drop off, and we thought that would be frustrating if we had any kind of limit on what they could drop off, so we didn't do that. But yes, we've been able to handle it. We've got some extra storage. We've got a great connection. Oh, of course, Heber has really allowed us to grow and expand and have more places to store things, and then we have a connection in Salt Lake, too, where we're between all three of those locations, we've been able to hold on to things really well and sort through it quickly. We've got a good team. Now, we do have the hours are still 10 to 2, so I do want to give heads up to people. But I think by having a little bit shorter hours, it allows us in the front end and the back end to sort through it all, which typically we're about 10 to 4, and that just doesn't give us quite as much time on the back end to get ready for the next day. So I think that's helped quite a bit.
Okay. Finally, I just wanted to note that the Latino Arts Festival has been postponed until next year. I think you usually hold that there at the library field in June.
Yeah, very disappointing, but yeah, we really had no choice. You know, with the restrictions of no more than 50 people, we talked to the city about it, and it just wasn't possible. We thought of some creative ideas of how we could, you know, keep people separated, but similar to Park Silly and some of the other big events over the summer, the recommendation to us by the city and the county was it's just not going to work this year. So we're going to postpone it till next year, and we'll be excited to keep up. We'll let people know through social media mostly, and we're going to try to do a little bit of a campaign ahead of time because we were really excited this year to have an even bigger and better Latino Arts Festival. We'll just have to wait for one more year.
All right. Again, if people need any help, again, with food, housing, bills, with mental health counseling, ccfpc.org. Anything else, Rob?
No, and just I know all last thing is just keep same thing with mental health. It's Mental Health Awareness Month this month, all month in May. So just encourage you, if you have a need or you know somebody that need help with their mental health and or just want to talk to a counselor, talk to one of our wellness coaches, we encourage you to check out our website as well and go to our counseling page. And there's a lot of different resources for you.
Okay, Rob, thanks so much.
Hey, thanks, Leslie.
Rob Harder, Executive Director of the Christian Center of Park City. And on the phone with me with an update at the Basin Rec, I have District Director Brian Hatton. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, Leslie.
So the field house opened a week ago. How's that working?
It's working out well. It's definitely a slow reentry back into operations. We have some limitations as far as number of people on the floor, like the other big recreation facilities. People have been very, very courteous, knowing that there are a lot of restrictions to what's going on, and our staff has been trained well, and things seem to be working out well so far.
Yeah. Again, only 20 people per floor, so you have to wait for somebody to come down before you can go up. Is that how it's working, or have you even met that max yet?
We haven't gotten to that max yet. We've come close to the upstairs where our track and most of our exercise equipment is, but from last report, we haven't gotten to that 20 yet, and people have been very respectful and honoring the time that we ask. We ask to keep it under an hour. We hand everybody a sanitation water bottle, and that's how we've been tracking who's upstairs and who's downstairs by the color of the water bottle they use.
Okay. Are there quieter hours if somebody's interested? Good time to come would be a certain time of the day?
Yeah, middays typically are quieter times, but again, given the dynamics of our community, I mean, granted, not everybody's back to work, but we have a lot of people working in the medical industry or in the airline industry that have those opportunities to fill in those typically random hours in most communities, but midday, like after 10, probably before 5 are probably your better times to come in and work out.
Okay. And the lap pool, does that open today?
Yes, we open that today, and that's a little different operations. You have to reserve your time. It's set up on an hour block to come swim, or I think it's a 50-minute block. So you have to go to our website and register, and it's included with your membership, so you just have to register online and then just show up at your time. You come to the front door, let the front desk attendant know, and then you just cut through the locker rooms where our access to the pool is. The challenge is there's no showers or locker room facilities available, so they just have to prepare before they come to the field house if they're going to come for their swim workout.
All right. What about fitness classes?
Fitness classes are kicking off today as well. Those are majority outside or virtual. We are offering on our website, if you go to our class schedule, there's a list of outdoor classes, which are being held at Matt Canoe Park, and then our virtual classes. We still have to keep classes, the older populations in the community, we're definitely going to stick with those virtual for a while. But we also have some classes that might not be able to fit in the outside arena. So if it's a bar class or something a little more specialized, we're trying to do those virtual and to meet the needs of everybody looking for their exercise outlet.
Okay. And are you getting a good turnout of the hours that you're open for the age group of 60 plus?
It's slow as well. I mean, it's people are, I think, are very cautious to re-enter into the public arena in the exercise world. Our crews did an amazing job as far as prepping the facility and did a lot of internal work. They cleaned everything a couple times and repainted. So it's a very safe environment, as safe as we can provide. And then, I mean, I think it's just people's perception and their comfort level of getting back into that realm.
And then what about the dog parks? When do they reopen?
The dog parks within the parks opened last Friday. The pond at Willow Creek, we were still doing some maintenance on the pond side. So that the planned opening for that is this Friday. Run Amok, we are, again, doing some projects in that area as well, and we hope to have that open this Friday as well. So before Memorial Weekend, we're hoping to have all of our dog parks and areas open for operation.
And the pickleball and tennis courts are open?
Pickleball and tennis courts are open. Pickleball, we have it limited to 4 courts out of the 8 that we can put up. And then also the overlaid courts at Trailside, we just have 2 out of the 4 that we have there. Tennis nets, we have all of our tennis nets up, so there's a little bit more opportunity to space and less people there. I mean, like everybody, we're continuing to ask to respect the social distancing and follow the CDC guidelines with cleanliness and all of those things.
All right. Do you have to reserve those then? Or can
no,
you just show up?
First serve still. Mm-hmm. We just ask that people adhere to the hour time limit on the courts, and those others just wait in their cars until there is an opening.
Okay.
To go use it.
Hey, real quick, the Restaurant Tax Committee recommendations will be discussed at the Summit County Council meeting on Wednesday. I don't know if you've had a chance to look, but the recommendation for Basin Rec is not to get funding. You had almost $650,000 for the Trailside parking lot expansion, as well as some sound panels at the field house. And I guess it's not being recommended just due to the current economic situation. And you're familiar with that? It's just something you'll push back another year or so?
Yeah, we'll hold off on that a little bit. I mean, we know the parking situation we have at Trailside with the adding, I mean, the skate park and the bike park and the disc golf course. It's definitely in the evenings and weekends is a busy place, and we recognize that there's a need to enhance the parking opportunities there. That's been on our radar for a while. We'll just hold off on that until we can get the funding. I mean, we understand that the economic part of the community is going to be a little different in the next couple of years. So just proceeding cautiously and making sure we're making good decisions with the community's finances and putting it towards a use that everybody can appreciate and use as much as possible.
Okay. Brian, I need to leave it there. Thanks so much for your time.